And so we end as we began in the West, with some of those jet-lagged miners. In fact, a search for gold like no other. Nanogold. Yes, found for the first time, in a way that also dates back to the times of Faraday and Whewell. Here's Rob Huff of CSIRO Exploration and Mining.
Well, it's very interesting that Faraday found these things in 1850 and found that if you had a gold chloride solution, you reacted it with something, that you'd get these gold colloids. And they were used for stained glass windows because the gold nanoparticles make the solution go red. And manufacturing industry over the last decade in particular has been having a massive push around developing gold nanoparticles to use for superconductors because they have really interesting properties because they're so tiny. They conduct better. They do all kinds of interesting things in terms of biological applications, so drug delivery systems into the body. The gold nanoparticles have been shown to bind to things like cancer cells. And then so the medical industry has been interested. And so we were looking at these things and thinking, well, okay, so also if you look in the natural environment, people have talked about colloidal gold moving around. And then we looked at those papers and saw that actually nobody's actually seen this stuff. So they've talked about it, but not actually seen it. And so we decided, well, we'd go looking for it.
Can I just tell you that at the Royal Institution in London, Faraday's colloidal solution is still there.
Oh, wow.
And I saw it last year.
Yeah.
And if you go back,
yes,
that's where you can, even now, come across what he used. You know, the
right.
Great Michael Faraday.
Yeah.
It just shows you it's so stable. It was kept there during the refurbishment. Quite fantastic. Okay, so they've never seen these particles. How big are they? Are they unbelievably small?
Well, so if we go back a step, we've got a population of gold crystals on this particular sample that I've been working on where you can actually see it. So I could show it to you now and you'd see this, what looks like glitter on this surface, and there's loads of it. It's just all gold. It's pure gold. And what we did was we're looking at the surfaces of those gold particles, the ones that we can see, using a high-powered microscope in West Australia, at the University of West Australia. And that enabled us to look at the real surface of those crystals. And when we looked there, we found this completely separate population that was the maximum size of those crystals was about 200 nanometers. You know, and a nanometer is a thousandth of a millimeter. And the smallest population were around 20 nanometers, which is amazing.
And this is occurring naturally?
And this is in the natural environment, actually just south of Southern Cross in West Australia, in an area where you've got salty groundwater, three times the salinity of seawater, slightly acidic, and that's reacting with a gold deposit to get the gold into solution, to form gold chloride in solution. So the salty water reacts with the gold, and then that forms this colloid. So you start to get this colloid, and then through evaporation, that colloid gets deposited on surfaces, and that's where it actually gets deposited. And that's where this nanoparticulate gold comes from.
Getting it free from nature, would that save a zillion bucks in manufacture?
I've been asked this a fair bit, and it's really interesting. Well, could you actually harvest this population? At the moment, we don't think we have the technology or the method. Certainly, we haven't worked it out. It might be there somewhere to pull out that kind of material. Can you pull it out of the groundwater, for instance, while it's there, you know, in a solution or as a colloid? And I'm not sure whether you can. But also out of the rocks, and people have been asking, well, can you actually separate out this really, really ultra-fine population? We don't have filters or things like that to do that. So we need to find some other way. And I think that's something we'll work on because we want to be able to go into other environments and go looking for this population where it might be there as a very, very small, very dilute. And how do we actually extract and isolate that material? And that's something I think we will try and do over the next few years.
Is this the first time in history that people have found the nanoparticles of gold occurring naturally?
Occurring naturally, yes. So people have gone looking for it, and there have been a couple of papers talking about it as a mechanism of moving gold around, especially, you know, during weathering, which is a really important thing in Australia, but not actually found the population before, not actually been able to really see it. And I think it's a function of the fact that we have new technologies these days, you know, that have come online in the last two or three years that enable us to see at those kind of scales, but also to be able to see surfaces like we haven't been able to see before. And that's why we're actually able to see it.
They used to tell me way back that in ordinary seawater you get tiny, tiny amounts of gold occurring.
Yes.
But of course it's far too expensive to extract that on dilution scales.
Yes.
That occur in the sea. With the new technology, it might, who knows?
I think it's there in very, very low concentrations. And if you go looking, like, say, in the groundwaters of West Australia around gold deposits, then there is, we find reasonable levels of gold actually in the water. When I say reasonable levels, we're still at the parts per billion, parts per trillion type levels, but we consider those something that's sometimes they're quite high. And we use that as a as an exploration tool, because if you find a really, really high number, you'd say, well, where's that gold coming from? It's probably coming from a gold deposit that's weathering nearby. So there's still plenty of gold out there. So it's a question of finding it. And one of the challenges that we have is increasingly it's more difficult to find new gold deposits. And so we need these kind of new methodologies, these new understandings to actually be able to go looking in more complex environments, more complex terrains to find deposits.
All those applications that you mentioned from superconductivity, you know, the miracles yes. of electronics and the medical applications, how does gold actually have an effect as it does at that scale?
Well, I think it's really interesting because it's a metal, and so it has some really interesting properties in terms of physical and chemical properties anyway. And all that's happening is that when you're down at those scales, that things are reacting far more than they would at coarser scales. And you have like a really high surface area from having what looks like a small kind of solution. But in actual fact, the amount of surface that's in there in real terms, because you've got all these tiny, tiny particles, means that it's very, very reactive. So gold is a lot more reactive than people would think it is, because everybody thinks of gold as just, well, something that's just inert. It doesn't, yeah. doesn't really change over time. Where in actual fact, it has some really interesting properties, which means that it does behave differently.
Rob Huff in the West with CSIRO Exploration and Mining. And with nano gold. Hope you find some. Next week on The Science Show, Nobel Prize Gold. Production by David Fisher and Charlie McCune. I'm Robin Williams in the Golden Years.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.